The magnificent RMS Titanic cuts through the North Atlantic waters, carrying 10-year-old George Calder, his 8-year-old sister Phoebe, and their young Aunt Beezy back to America after 2 months in England. The ship stands as humanity's crowning maritime achievement, 14 stories tall, longer than 4 city blocks, with amenities rivaling the finest hotels. For George, the Titanic isn't just a ship, it's a floating city of endless possibilities, complete with gymnasiums, swimming pools, and countless corridors begging to be explored, despite Aunt Daisy's increasingly exasperated warnings. Their first-class accommodations showcase the height of Edwardian luxury, but George's adventurous spirit pulls him far from these comforts. He's secretly explored the stark contrast of third-class accommodations, where he discovered unexpected friendship with 4-year-old Enzo and his father Marco, Italian immigrants pursuing the American dream. These unauthorized expeditions have seriously tested Aunt Daisy's patience. Her threats of reporting George's behavior to his father carry the weighty consequence of military school, a prospect that terrifies George, though not enough to fully curb his curiosity. That night, while Phoebe and Aunt Daisy sleep, George's curiosity drives him to seek a rumored Egyptian mummy in the baggage hold. The quiet corridors remind him of nights spent in the woods after his mother's death 3 years ago. In the baggage room, George encounters a menacing, scarred man who initially mistakes him for a thief, then turns sinister upon realizing George is from first class. Suddenly, a tremendous rumbling shakes the ship. The violent motion topples trunks, allowing George to escape in the chaos as the engines grind to a halt. When George reaches the open deck, he finds an almost carnival atmosphere. First-class passengers laugh while watching third-class passengers having a snowball fight with ice chunks from the iceberg. Everyone treats the incident as mere entertainment. They've merely nudged an iceberg, nothing to worry about aboard the unsinkable Titanic. Shortly after midnight, their steward, Henry, bursts into their cabin with instructions from Captain Smith. Everyone must report to the boat deck wearing life jackets. Aunt Daisy initially dismisses this as excessive caution until she discovers Phoebe's empty bed. George confesses to his midnight wanderings, realizing with growing dread that his sister must have awakened and gone searching for him. In the corridor, George spots a trail of lemon drops, Phoebe's favorite candy, meticulously placed like breadcrumbs. Following the trail takes them deep into the ship, where they encounter a locked gate blocking third-class passengers from ascending. When they finally find Phoebe with Enzo and Marco, the ship lurches violently and water begins flooding the lower decks. With rising water creating new urgency, George remembers a conversation with Thomas Andrews, the ship's architect, about emergency escape ladders in the stoker's quarters. He leads their unlikely group, first-class passengers and Italian immigrants, toward what he prays will be their salvation. The group makes their way through increasingly flooded corridors until they find the ladder that takes them up to the boat deck. There, chaos reigns. Officers direct Aunt Daisy and the children to one of the few remaining lifeboats, but deliver devastating news. Marco must stay behind with the other men. Women and children only is the rule being enforced with increasing desperation. After an emotional goodbye, Marco entrusts Enzo to Aunt Daisy's care. As George tries to board the lifeboat with them, an officer pulls him back. At 10 years old, he's deemed old enough to stay with the men. Despite Aunt Daisy and Phoebe's frantic protests, the lifeboat is lowered away, leaving George behind on the doomed vessel. The scene embodies the heartbreaking reality of the Titanic disaster, families torn apart by arbitrary rules and insufficient lifeboats. The ship's designers had prioritized aesthetics over safety, providing lifeboats for only about half the passengers and crew. Now, these decisions translate into impossible choices about who lives and who dies. Marco carries George across the severely tilting deck and makes a desperate decision to jump as the bow submerges. They plunge into the North Atlantic waters, so cold it feels like millions of needles piercing George's skin. In these near-freezing April waters, survival time is under 15 minutes before hypothermia proves fatal. Marco pulls George to a floating door while clinging to a wooden crate himself. They watch as the Titanic's lights extinguish and the massive vessel splits in two before vanishing beneath the waves. The water fills with the cries of over 1,500 people fighting for their lives. George spots a nearby lifeboat and paddles toward it, dragging Marco alongside. After initial rejection, George climbs aboard and struggles to pull Marco in, unexpectedly aided by the scarred man from the baggage hold, now disguised as a woman. The survivors huddle in darkness, surrounded by floating bodies, fighting hypothermia while awaiting rescue. With most who entered the water perishing within minutes, George and Marco's survival proves remarkable. Hours pass as George huddles with Marco in the freezing boat. At dawn, the Carpathia approaches through iceberg-dotted waters. As they near, George hears Enzo calling from the deck and sees Aunt Daisy holding him with Phoebe beside them, all three survivors from another lifeboat. Their reunion reflects both the joy of survivors finding loved ones and the devastating reality that many searched in vain. Of Titanic's 2,229 passengers and crew, only 713 would reach New York alive. Back at the family farm, George struggles with trauma. Unable to sleep, he sneaks to the woods nightly seeking solace. One night, he discovers Papa sitting on a weathered boulder. Truly seeing each other for the first time since Mama's death, George breaks down, crying for those lost, for his survival, and knowing part of him will forever remain in that ocean. The disaster opens communication between father and son that grief had closed. Papa suggests building a small boat for their pond, a therapeutic project to help George process his experience while rebuilding their relationship. The Titanic disaster transformed maritime safety, mandating sufficient lifeboats, 24-hour radio watches, regular drills, and establishing the International Ice Patrol to monitor icebergs. For survivors like George, psychological impacts endured through nightmares and survivor's guilt, yet also fostered resilience and appreciation for life's fragility. The Titanic symbolizes both technological hubris and humanity's dual capacity for selfishness and sacrifice. Some wealthy men disguised as women to escape, while others chose to die together rather than separate. The ship's band played until the end, knowingly sealing their fate. George's experience reflects the loss of innocence that accompanied the disaster, marking the end of the Edwardian era's blind faith in technology and progress. Yet hope emerges as George's family expands to include Marco and Enzo, Aunt Daisy finds potential love, and George develops a deeper connection with his father through their boat-building project, processing trauma while looking forward. The story reminds us that history comprises individual human experiences in extraordinary circumstances. Even in darkness, the human spirit finds ways to heal and rebuild, carrying both memory's weight and the possibility of new beginnings.